Hello, Potters, and welcome to episode 94 of CosPod, the podcast for all things cosplay. We hope you guys are having a fantastic weekend. I know we are melting here in Texas because we finally hit 100 degrees. So if you need to cast resin, it's a great time to go cast resin outside. Or paint.
Spray painting is perfect.
That's really about it. And you can only do it between the hours of maybe noon and I'd say 7 p.m. because outside of those hours, it's so humid outside here in Dallas that it won't set. Whatever you're doing, resin won't set and paint won't set. So even though it's hot and feeling terrible outside, you have to do it between the hottest hours of the day because that's when it's not humid.
I'm hoping that I get my paint in this week because I have my boots to paint for Sailor Mercury. And I'm like, if I can get them done this week, I'm going to be really thrilled about this because it's like ideal setting weather for the paint.
Although, quick safety aside for resin, there is such a thing as too hot with resin casting.
Oh,
if
God,
you put
yes.
too much hardener or if you put it in an area where it cannot basically equalize itself in its chemical reaction, you can light resin on fire without actually lighting it on fire. It will set itself on fire. And depending on the container you have it in, it can and will melt the container it's into.
It's kind of entertaining.
This is why you don't mix resin in certain types of plastic cups, because it will literally melt through the plastic and you get a giant hole and a giant mess, especially when that resin sets. In about 15 minutes. Try getting it off your counter.
Yeah,
I have
so
some in the curtains next to me still have permanent resin stains in it. Good times, man. Good times.
The joys of resin.
The joys of cosplay. You have to make these mistakes, guys. We tell you to do it so you can avoid it and not mess up, say, your parents' carpet. Always a good thing to not mess up your parents' carpet. But at the same time, sometimes you just got to experiment because we won't progress the art that way. Safely.
Thanks for the caveat.
I have to say that TRF is coming up, and so I will be spinning fire poi. I will actually be lighting things on fire intentionally for the sake of lighting things on fire.
Fire graphic and here.
And again, it will be safely here. You can do a graphic of my fire poi being lit on fire.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, Amber. You just made my day.
I thought you might enjoy that here. In fact, I will tear off the cover and now you can see the silvered fire blackened actual poi. There you go. I have been practicing with these. This will be in my cosplay update, which will not come yet, but I have been waiting and waiting and waiting for TRF because Akon was taken away from me cruelly at the last minute. And so now I'm looking forward to my other actual vacation, which is Texas Renaissance Festival. So I'm so psyched. I need a vacation so much. I really do. All right, cosplay updates. I will let you go first since yours are cosplay related and mine are not.
I don't have too many, unfortunately. A lot of my updates is mostly me looking for fabric I'm prepping for next year. And that requires a lot of research and a lot of looking up Game of Thrones stuff because I'm very much psychotic and I'm really trying to get screen accuracy, which means spending a lot of money on very fancy fabrics. So much so, this is probably the most expensive set of costumes I've made in a really long arse time. So yeah, it's been just a lot of researching and getting swatches and trying to figure out which ones to get. I have probably bought out most of the embroidery aisle at Joann's this past weekend because they were having a sale on their embroidery floss. It was 25% off, plus I had a 25% off coupon on top of that. These are usually about 40 cents a piece, and I bought $32 worth. So you can do the math. That's a lot of floss. I'm pretty much set for embroidery for the next 5 years or so, if that. Other than that, I've just been continuing my work on my Sailor Scout outfit. Got my collar done. Yay! So pretty, so easy, so fun. And I've opted to make some changes to how I do my bows. I currently sell bows through my Etsy shop. But I wanted to try a new technique. Some people said I should try to use some stabilizer and some interfacing instead of my usual method was with polyfill because I just like the poofiness of it. So I thought I would give this a shot. And I kind of like how they turn out. They're cool. They're cute. It's upside down. That's better. This one is supposed to be for the back. I'm not a big fan of the butt bow. I kind of like the poofier look to it. But I think for what I did, it works. It's cute. It's easy to attach. It's very straight and Sailor Moon-like, so, I'll roll with it. But yeah, that's basically it for my cosplay updates. It's mostly just prepping for next year, trying to finish out Mercury. I'm at the point where all I need to do is get her boots done, and whenever the paint comes in, fingers crossed that that's soon. I'm so happy. I'm really impressed at how much I've improved on just this one costume alone. Like, I can see where my sewing skill was back when I made Mercury in 2012 and how I'm making it now. And it's like a night and day difference. Like, I can't believe that I'm the same person making the same costume. The only thing that I've salvaged from the old costume is the wig, because it's the one wig that I think is like the perfect color, because Mercury has like 20 different shades of blue in her hair. And I really don't want to go and find another wig when this one still works so well. But yeah, it's just like when it's all done and I get proper photos, I'm going to do a comparison shot and be like, here's the before, here's the after. And it's like proof of concept that you do improve over time if you just keep at it. It's kind of fun and kind of cool. So yeah, those are my cosplay updates. Back
And
to my
your
goodies.
Etsy store is.
Oh, it's called Tailfin Designs. It's currently offline because I've been in the process and spamming for Dragon Con, but post Dragon Con, it'll be back up and running again. So if people want to buy more Sailor Scout bows, they are more than welcome to. Those usually sell out pretty quickly. I like poofy butt bows,
There we
that
go.
helps. Yeah.
That's better. Now that we've done the promoting.
Promoting's done. There'll be more promoting later.
My only cosplay related update, and Val, you can take the pictures from my Facebook.
Sure.
I was making really good progress on my duster. I ended up doing a little bit more embroidery on the front skirt panels, which I finally finished sewing from last time. And then I pinned them up to the bodice, and it's actually hanging to my left. And I took pictures of what it will look like when it's finished, once I finally get around to sewing it. But unfortunately, right now, my craft table is an absolute disgusting mess. And that is because Murphy paid me a visit over the last week. And that is why the rest of my updates are not cosplay related. Basically, my smartphone's charging port broke, so I had to emergency buy a new phone since I cannot go without one. So, update number one here. Now I have a new phone. New to me. It's actually not a new phone. And then my car air conditioning started making hissing noises a couple of days ago. So I get to go and take it into the shop and be poor again so that I can have working air conditioning, which is very necessary in the state of Texas because I'm not working hours at the moment where I can ride my motorcycle yet, but that will be coming soon so I can ride my motorcycle again. And my other oof, share and tell is right here. Because my laptop hard drive has imminent hard drive failure. And I got a message from my Lenovo center basically saying, your hard drive is literally about to fail. You need to back up your stuff and get a new one. And my laptop has had a good long life. It is 5 years old, still almost in perfect working condition if you accept the fact that I have a bad sector somewhere on my hard drive. And the multi-threading in the processor is starting to fail after 5 years of very intense usage since I also used it in college. So I had to go out and I bought myself a brand new Lenovo, which you will occasionally see me taking to conventions so that I can do some quick video processing as we need it, since it's also basically our mobile workstation. So now that my checkbook has been drained and I am now poor after having to suddenly buy a new laptop I didn't budget for, and a new phone that I didn't budget for, and pay to have my air conditioning fixed in the state of Texas, I don't get to buy any more cosplay supplies for a while. Unfortunately, I will have to settle myself with the cosplay supplies that I do have and just work on the projects that I already have materials for, which I have enough to keep me busy for a little while, and that's fine. But I also want to start making a banner for our TRF camp, because if you've never been to a Ren festival, if you go camping, quite a few people have clans that go camping. They're not actual clans. I don't think I know of any actual blood-related clans that go, but people group together in a sort of informal clan. And to mark your campsite, they'll usually have some sort of banner or crest. And so I want to make a Lord of the Rings banner for our campsite.
Of course you do.
Hey, I asked my campmates which banner they wanted, and they voted on it, so I already know which one I'm making.
Of course, it's Lord of the Rings, of course.
It's very recognizable because if I did a pirate banner, it would look like everybody else's because everybody
Yeah.
else does pirate stuff for their clans. There's a couple Scottish and Welsh clans out there who actually have a coat of arms on theirs. That's pretty much it. There aren't any other banners. So I want to be recognizable in my campsite.
And you definitely will. Based on what I have seen and experienced in the past, yeah, you're right. It tends to be, if it's pirate related, it's all pretty singular. It's the same.
Yes, and the campsites tend to be fairly large. So you can't just rope them off. They don't allow you to just rope them off. So you have to have something to kind of designate, this is my space. It's not like you can put, tape on the ground like you can at conventions to designate space. You can't do that on dirt. So, nor can you light things on fire. So no, you cannot put a line of gasoline around your camp and light it either. That doesn't work. There's a burn ban. It would look cool, but you would also burn your camp down.
As I say, it's like a fire moat. Yeah.
Exactly. No, a lot of people, because the weather is odd in South Texas, it can change on a dime. And a lot of people really do build moats around their campsite because when the rain comes, it will flood your campsite. So they build a moat to kind of direct the rain away from your tent. Because
It's
there's
smart.
mosquitoes down there too.
Yeah.
Campers know this. Campers know how to, outdoor it. So it'll be good. I have all of my gear sitting in my living room so that, my neighbors won't steal it from my shed since they steal everything else from outside my house. So I have all my camping gear inside now, and it's accounted for, so I'm good. Now I just have to figure out what to cook.
That'll be for another day.
Yeah, my duster will be done. Basically, all I have to do is sew the skirt panels to the bodice and it's done. Everything else
Awesome.
is already taken care of. If I want to glue the gems to it, I can. It looks fine the way it is, but I could put the gems on it. I don't even have to sew a shirt because I have a shirt I can use and I have pirate bands I can use. And I'd like to get flat-soled boots. And this is actually cosplay related because kids, if you've never actually walked around a convention for 8 hours in heels, it's not as easy as walking around the office for 8 hours in heels. So I highly, highly recommend to you to choose cosplays that have comfy shoes or to modify them so that your cosplay has comfy shoes because there is something to be said for not having to walk around in heels for a good 8, 10 hours in a day where you're doing a lot of standing. And TRF really isn't that different from a regular convention site, except that the ground is more uneven because it's not paved, it's dirt. So there are rocks and things everywhere. So the ground isn't easy to walk on. It's even worse in heels. And I have done TRF in heels. They were chunky heels, so they were made for impact, but it didn't help. So I have to go out and purchase a new set of boots that have flats so that I'm not dying by the end of the day. You don't get used to it. You really don't. Because you can't walk around TRF every day in heels, so there's no getting used to it. It's okay. When fall starts coming around, that's when all the stores stock their boots anyway, since it's a fall and winter thing. So I should be able to find them before I go to TRF.
Yeah, you should be fine.
Yeah, as much as I would love to spend $300 on a pair of Ren boots, yeah, no. It's not going to happen this year.
Maybe down the line. I do have to say, for the Ren Faire guys, they usually have like one of the best like guarantees, like lifetime guarantees that they'll always replace them, they'll fix soles, whatever. It's just the initial money put down for it up front. Oh my goodness.
Oh, the boots are costly, but They custom make them to you. Like they make a duct tape dummy of your leg and feet. They do it right there on site. They actually make them on site. And then they will deliver them to you. And you get to pick all the different accessories that go on them because some of them will have buttons on them since you can lace them. It's very good quality leather. They will polish it for you. And yeah, they have a lifetime repair on them because of the type of money. Granted, you can only get them repaired at TRF or you can
But
mail the boots to them. But still, they have a lifetime warranty on their good quality, comfortable boots. So, just like any part of costuming or cosplay, quality costs money. And if you can't afford it, that's okay. There are still other selections of other types of boots. Dr. Scholl's is just fine. But you also have to consider that some of the high quality that you see at these fairs from the actual workers, it may not look it, but those costumes can cost in excess of $1,000. And that's just for the costume. That's not for the wig or the makeup, which they have to work 8 weekends a year in said makeup and wig and clothing. So sometimes it's worth it because those clothes will last a long time. Quality can be a good thing, just a little hard on the pocketbook.
It can be, which is perfect for the question that I got asked. Someone asked me if the Game of Thrones stuff I'm working on is more expensive than Amidala. Yes, it is. I've spent $308 on the fabric alone for one outfit. There you go. It's fantastic fabric. It's silk shantung. I love the crap out of this stuff. It is so gorgeous. It's not cheap anywhere. You're going to end up paying $21.50 to $25 a yard.
Even
Irregardless
on
of where you
sale.
go, even on sale, if you're lucky. So, yeah.
It's because that stuff is imported, guys. It's not made here in the States.
It's so beautiful, though. Oh my God, it's gorgeous.
Mean, if you guys follow J Heart Designs, they're making a replica of the Cinderella dress from the recent movie that just came out.
We've linked them once for our cosplay of the day photo, the Petticoat of Doom.
I think they said over 250 yards of fabric is in the skirt alone. And they actually imported the what was it? It's not tulle, but it's similar to it. I think it was silk organza.
I think so, yes.
They had to import it from Italy. And it's not cheap. But hey, not everything is made here in the States, unfortunately. I know Warble is not, and we would love it if it was. We would love it if all these different fabrics were made here in the States too, as well as thermoplastics in general. Come to us, come to the United States. But anyways, shall we move on to cosplay updates
Let's move
and
on to
news?
cosplay updates. Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so if you guys are looking for Yaya Han's bodysuit pattern, it has now hit stores. You can find it in your local Joann's, Hobby Lobby, Michaels, anybody that sells patterns. So you
Huzzah!
should be able to find that physically in stock now. You can also order it from, I believe it's Simplicity's website. I think, was it Simplicity or McCall?
McCall.
Okay, so you
It's
can order it
McCall,
from
yeah.
McCall's website. All right, so if you're looking for that, now you can find it. Next thing on our list, World Cosplay Summit is coming up very, very, very soon, as in less than 2 weeks. So we would like to wish our US cohorts the best of luck at World Cosplay Summit. I believe, as usual, they will stream it live for free. However, you have to have signed up for an account on their streaming site. So we urge you guys, if you'll go look up, and we'll put the link here in the show notes. If you look up World Cosplay Summit on Facebook, they usually link the streaming site, which is slipping my mind at the moment because I know I have an account with them.
Nico.
That's the one. Make sure that you've signed up in advance for your account so that you're not stuck the day of trying to get it set up. And also note that if you are not able to watch it in real time, they only make it available for a very limited time as a recording. You can't just go back and watch it in archives forever. They actually do take it off. And I believe Nico Nico has exclusive streaming rights, so you won't find this anywhere else. nobody else is mirroring them, in other words. So you can't just go to, say, Crunchyroll and find it too. It doesn't work that way. So we urge you guys, please support your local teams. Even if you're not here in the States, around the world, please send your team messages of good luck. Please support them. And we wish the best of luck, of course, to all of the teams participating in the World Cosplay Summit in Japan.
USA fingers in particular.
Yes. Fingers crossed the US brings home something, though.
Doesn't help. I mean, they're good friends of ours. We know both of them. So it's like, that's why we're just like extra special. Like, oh my God, awesome. They got to make greatness happen. I know that they've been really pushing to try to get their costumes done for all of the events going on. So fingers crossed they do well. I do have one more tip because I found out about this last year. If you don't have an account through Nico Nico, you can actually watch it as it's live streamed. But they do put commercials in between where you get like 15 to 30 seconds of a giant pause and you miss like half the skit. So do yourself a favor and actually sign up for an account. I know it's more steps and yeah, it means giving out your information, your email address, but oh my God, the ads were horrible last year. They just completely destroyed the experience.
You can actually miss large chunks of skits between the buffering and the ads.
Yeah.
And you know, so like, there are people who post in chat, they're like, I just missed the entire Italy skit.
That's what happened to me.
I couldn't see anything through the ads and because it was lagging so badly. Because they have a lot of people that log on and watch this live. And their servers can't always handle the extra bandwidth.
Right. So do yourself a favor and sign up, please.
All right. Next, we have International Cosplay Day. Yes, that is actually a thing. International Cosplay Day is coming up on August 29th. The reason we are saying this is so that you guys have time to plan your cosplay events. We urge everybody, if you would like to, you know, gather a whole bunch of friends together and just have a little potluck. Or everybody go out and cosplay and go bowling. You know, have some fun with your fellow cosplayers to celebrate basically a day that is dedicated to the art of cosplay. You know, make it fun. Invite new people that don't know what cosplay is and show them the right way what cosplay is supposed to be. So you guys have until August 29th. I don't think we're doing anything, unfortunately, because at that point Val will be in frantic Dragon Con mode.
Oh God,
and
yes.
I have to work.
I'm just going to be like, I must get everything packed, all the things sewed. Oh my God. I'll probably be still stressing out over a bunny suit that I'm debating on making or not. So yeah. It'll be cosplay sewing day. That's what it'll be. Yeah.
And August 29th is a Saturday, incidentally.
Same weekend as PAX Prime. So yeah.
Yes.
All the people who are going, you suck.
I'll be watching the live stream when I can. All right, and last but not least in the news, all of the pictures from SDCC are out.
Whee! As you guys have noticed from our daily feed on Facebook, oh my God, I like spammed us with so much Comic-Con stuff, but when it hits big.
It does, and there are a lot more people cosplaying, including celebrities who are now getting into the act, all going incognito. Mm-hmm. They seem to get a kick out of being able to go around without being recognized. And nobody else knows who they are, but they always enjoy the cosplays. So we say kudos to you guys. Keep up the good work. We have no problems with celebrities going incognito in cosplay around places like Comic-Con. Fun for everybody.
Have you seen the new one that I just found out about today? Jamie Lee Curtis apparently dressed up at EVO 2015 as Street Fighter's Vega, and nobody had a clue it was her.
Yes.
I love Jamie Lee Curtis to bits and pieces. And to read that, I was like, I have a soul sister now. That is so awesome. She looked really good, too.
I know Adam Savage has been doing it for a long time.
Oh, yeah. He's a pro.
But he has started bringing in his fellow celebrities into the fold. And so, good on you, man. We're proud of you. Keep up the good work.
And it's really cool just to read how she's now starting to get into the cosplay and the comic book scene. This was her first year at San Diego Comic-Con. It's just really interesting to see how a wide variety of celebrities are now embracing the dorkiness that we all do. It's so cool.
And you can always find pictures of these on the internets because they always – the stories come out after the con.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Hey, by the way, this was so-and-so. So you guys can always go and look up those pictures. There's many, many, many media sites at this point that have SDCC pictures, as well as AX pictures, for those who went to Anime Expo. And, of course, we hope that everybody who went to SGC and Tokyo and Tulsa this past weekend had a fantastic time. If you guys have photos, please feel free to share those with us so that we can share them with our listeners. Incoming segue. Speaking of SGC.
Segue! We like segues. Segues are awesome. But yeah, speaking of SGC, as we talked about in our last episode with Heidi, I was attending SGC this year. I was helping out with cosplay staff. For those who don't remember or who weren't watching last episode, SGC is a Screw Attack gaming convention. And Screw Attack is a video game-centric website. They cover news, stories, video game reviews. They create videos, a lot of things like that. So think of like Rooster Teeth, but the smaller version of it. And their user base is about 125,000 people. It might be a little bit more than that. I'm not sure. This particular convention is kind of a revival for them. They used to hold one annually, but attendance rates kind of dropped and they had some new projects come up. So they set it aside for a few years. It came back in 2013 and it's really been growing ever since. I think this year they have maybe about 4,000 to 5,000 people. So that was pretty cool to see. This year they moved their venue to Frisco, Texas. And from a layout standpoint, I think the convention really benefited from it. Everything was on one floor and directly connected to the hotel. The hotel had an open bar, which as a gamer is always a good thing, which as a gamer is always a great thing. As a kid, not so good. They did have Starbucks there. That was very important. I saw a lot of Starbucks on the floor.
They were sponsored by Starbucks. It's a gaming con. I expect this.
Starbucks is required. It's so funny. It's like the rules now are like Mountain Dew, Doritos, Starbucks.
I was going to say, it's like these companies, they know their people. We are their people.
Mm-hmm.
And so all a convention can really do is just say, come to me, my people. And of course, Starbucks, Doritos, and Mountain Dew all know that if you're going to have any demographic buy your product and you have a giant convention full of them, you've hit the jackpot.
Mm-hmm. So guess what was there?
Advice to these sponsorships, go find gaming conventions. You will make your money back.
Because needless to say, yeah. Yeah.
Even places like McDonald's, because gamers get munchies in the middle of the night. And of course, where do they go? What is open 24 hours? McDonald's. So go sponsor these conventions. Anyways, moving on from Starbucks.
Obvious Amber is obvious. They did have a little Mountain Dew booth and they were giving out free samples. Of course they were. Of course they were. Okay, so anyway. But the one thing I really liked about this particular layout is that the hallways were really, really wide and the space was designed to handle fairly large crowds, about the level of what SGC brought in. So it made it very easy to figure out where the rooms were and how programming was handled. And they kept it pretty simple, pretty straightforward. It was like, here's main events, here's open gaming, here's the dealer's room, here's the console room, there's another panel room, there's the cosplay hideout. You're done. You didn't have to do any extra mess, and people were able to easily get from one end to the other without a whole lot of worries. So it was kind of cool. My one critique is that with this layout, it didn't allow for a huge variety of programming. Your panels were either in main events or in the panel room, and they didn't have a whole lot of panels going on. It was maybe like 5 a day, if that. And because of this, a lot of people were starting to line up like 3 hours earlier, and they always cap the line about an hour before the panel starts. So there were so few panels and with so many excess fans with really nowhere to go. If you got tired of gaming in the open gaming area, it was just kind of like, okay, well, what do we do? I mean, there's no other panels to go to. I can't sit in and learn a new technique or talk to somebody about this. It's just kind of like, It's up in the open, out in the air. So as a downside, if you're not big into gaming, probably not a good idea to go to SGC.
Video gaming.
Well,
specifically.
They have tabletop there and they had card games. So they actually had a pretty good variety going on.
They do. It's just not known as a tabletop con.
True.
So those who are into tabletop gaming, you guys can also go. And if you have nothing to do, crack open a pack of cards and make a game. You have all these people milling around, make new friends.
And that's exactly what a lot of people did when they couldn't get into lines for their favorite panels or things they wanted to do. They just pop a squad on the ground, brought open their DSs or opened up their card games, and they just started having at it. They had
Street
a little
pass.
street pass. Oh, street pass like a mad boy. Woo, your thumbs got tired. They had a section, which I just call it the beanbag section, where it's just a giant area where they toss out a bunch of beanbags and people could just lounge out there and game. And that's basically what everybody did, was it just expanded that area where it almost started taking over the hallway. And it was like in between all the stuff going on. It's like, hey, card game time, let's do it. So yeah, it's kind of fun that way. There were definitely a lot of games, and I mean a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot of games everywhere. And that's something I really appreciate as somebody who does not only console gaming, but I like the old arcade cabinets too. They had a ton of those all over the place. You just couldn't go anywhere without seeing a console or a cabinet. And that's always really, really cool. So I really appreciated the fact that they were willing to include all types of gamers, young and old. And it even expanded to the point of where they had games in their dealer's room. Towards the back, they had a lot of independent developers coming in. And as somebody who really respects and supports a lot of the indie devs, that was really fun to see that I could go in there, try out brand new products that no one else has seen before. I can talk to these developers, learn more about the games, and it's like, okay, this is cool. Kind of reminds me of PAX. Even better, I love the crap out of PAX. So in saying that, I did get a chance to actually play a couple of games. One that is absolutely ridiculous, but I could see it catching on really quickly. It's called Super Slam Dunk Touchdown. The name of the developer is called Tipping Goat.
Not Tipping Cow? Come
Not Tipping
on.
Cow, Tipping Goat. I'm thinking they.
I guess you can tip goats.
Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, you can scare them. They have the fainting goats. But
Well
yeah,
acquainted.
So the concept of this game, it's a 2D style done in 3D physics. It's a 3-on-3 competitive game where your players that are combinations of characters from other sports. So like you'll have a football player, a basketball player, and then a roller derby player on one team. And you're just basically using your players' key attributes to try to score goals. And so you can punch each other, you can kick each other. With the roller derby, you've got a speed boost because you're on roller skates. If you're the hockey player, you can use your hockey stick and whack people across the head and shoot goals that way. It sounds really violent, but it's done in such a 2D style that's very cute and fun and really energetic. It was surprising to see so many people clustered around this very simple game, and it was just a giant mess of stuff going on. Half the time I was like, what is the, how did he get the puck? How are they scoring goals? I don't understand. But it was just so much fun. And really, that's all it comes down to. It was fun. And it was stupid fun. And it was even more stupid fun after that. Now, from a cosplay standpoint, because that's actually why I was there, was for cosplay, not for playing video games. I swear I did my job, I promise. There wasn't a whole lot on the floor of the convention until about the cosplay contest itself. And I think a lot of that was attributed to the fact that gaming cons tend to be very light on cosplay. Because even at places like GamesCon or PAX Prime, the cosplay to attendee ratio is very tiny when compared to like an anime convention where you're probably seeing 30, 40%, maybe even more than that in costume. So it's just one of those things that kind of comes with the gaming convention scene. So I didn't get as many pictures of people on the show floor as I would have liked because there weren't as many as expected. But the few people that I did see who were out really seemed to be enjoying themselves as much as everyone else. They loved just running around, being in the video game characters, and getting their pictures taken. Now, the contest itself was a lot of work. It was a lot of work. It made Val very, very tired, and it's been a very long weekend. I had a lot of fun, I'm not gonna lie, but it was a lot of work. I didn't get as many photos as I would have liked. I was running around like a mad woman backstage, as most people do during cosplay contests. It's okay. SGC does get bonus points from me because they had a section in the back for all of their tech equipment. They had one guy running sound, they had two people running the cameras, and they were actually live editing at the same time. Really good work, very streamlined, and they were completely out of the way so they could make more room in the audience so more people could come in and see the contest. So I was like, genius, why don't we do this more often, people? Great, let's keep that up, please. And I have to give a big thanks to the convention staff because they were very accommodating and doing their best to ensure that everyone was helped, from us who are just pulled in as assistants to the cosplayers themselves. I have to also give a big, big, big thank you to Drew and Ben, aka BJ Bentendo, for being very, very wonderful MCs this year and for dealing with my really horrible chicken scratch handwriting that they had to read off of. Again, I'm so sorry. A million times over. Man, it got rough after a while where I was just like scrambling to write down names so things could start on time. So thank you guys for being patient with me. Oh my God, I heart you a million times. Overall though, we had a ton of contestants show up, way more than what I had anticipated. 50 plus easily. I'm sure it was more than that, but 50 plus easily. And great entries. It was a wide variety of costumes. It was really nice to see, and a great way to cap off Saturday, given that I didn't see a whole lot on the show floor. Everyone just kind of brought it in during the contest itself, and that was really cool to see. But overall, it's a good small con. If you're a tournament gamer, there are a ton of options for you to play stuff all over the weekend. If you're a fan of YouTubers, or if you have kids who are under the age of 18, plenty of YouTube fans showed up and hosted their own panels and all that stuff. So YouTubers, big place to go to is SGC. Or if you just want to hang out with 1,000 people for a few hours and talk about video games, yeah, this is a good con to go to as well. So yeah, overall, good experience. I probably will go again, maybe as a fan, not as a staff member, because that was very tiring. But I would recommend it. If you're a gamer, video gamer in particular, have at it. If you're a tabletopper, there is stuff there for you too, I promise.
There you go. And we hope that those of you who are looking at entering in your very first contest, that we would urge you to consider SGC. Granted, we would also invite you to consider AllCon, where we are hosting the cosplay contest.
Come to us at all con.
We're almost at the halfway point between here and AllCon. The halfway point actually comes in October. And then we will start frantically running around like chickens with our heads cut off as we're trying to get prizes and everything else. Woo!
Yay! But it'll be fun. We had fun with it last year. This year. We had fun with it this year. I'm sure we'll have fun with it next year. There we go.
There
That's
you
where I was
go.
going with that, I promise.
And there are still people who are nervous about getting on stage, and that is totally understandable. We get it. Everybody has to start somewhere. And once you do it the first time, it's not as bad subsequent times. I mean, there's always anxiety when you go
Oh,
up
yeah.
on stage, even for the most experienced of people. There's always going to be nervousness. So don't feel bad. I mean, that there's no shame in being anxious on stage. Everybody does it.
Yeah.
But unless you actually do it and psych yourself up to be able to do it, then you'll always be able to psych yourself out of it. So you kind of have to get the guts and have somebody shove you up on stage and make you do it once, and then it's not quite as bad. So you can always ask one of the more experienced cosplayers to kind of talk you through it, kind of talk you down from the ledge, as it were, so that you're more comfortable getting up on stage. And certainly we don't mind if anybody wants to ask us, even if you email us about, what's it like to be up on stage, we're happy to talk about it.
Oh yeah. And I've done it before where I've sat in contests and there's been somebody sitting next to me saying they're really nervous, it's their first time, and I'll talk to them. And it usually just being able to talk to somebody while you're there really helps calm down the nerves. I think just that little bit and just showing how much you care can make a world of difference.
That watching other people do it, especially if you watch, people in front of you physically going up and doing it, and you say, oh, okay, it's not as bad as I thought it would be. And then it also helps to have very supportive staff that will make sure that it is the best possible circumstance for you. I mean, obviously we can't control everything, but we do our best to at least set you up for success. And there are still going to be people who basically can't do it
Oh yeah.
one time or another. And
It
that's okay.
happens.
If you have to back out, that is okay. But we urge you to try again. That's pretty much all I wanted to say there.
It's always fun to try out contests. I mean, even if you don't win, because I don't think it's about winning, because there's only like this many prizes and these many entries. So it's like, eh. I think there's more fun to it than just being able to show off your costume. You get to meet new people backstage. Who knows, they can become your new best friends. You get to learn more about cosplay. You get to learn new techniques. You get to talk to judges, sometimes even cos famous people. So I think it's just a fun experience all around. I'm always going to promote going contests, but that's just me. Even though I don't really do them anymore. Wait, I take that back. I'm doing the one for Dragon Con, which is probably going to kill me, but that's okay.
I considered entering my duster at AllCon because of the intricacy of the work and because all of it is solid and top stitched and clean. And then I was like, no, I don't really need to. I don't really need to do anything for it. It's like, okay.
It's like, okay.
It's a nice duster, okay. But speaking of contests, quite a few people lately have been asking about doing armor for the first time because it is apparent that those who tend to win top prizes tend to have some sort of armor on them. Even
Not
if
me.
it's basic leather armor, even if it's simple gauntlets or just a headpiece, that is okay. But I've noticed that on forums in various places lately, that people seem a little intimidated by the notion of making armor for the first time because they'll see pictures of cos famous people wearing awesome armor. They'll go, I can't do that. Well, as Val is pointing to herself constantly,
I can't do that.
the thing is, you can do that, but maybe not all at once and maybe not your first time.
I still can't do
And part of it is because, with the community being so generous with information, I think we've kind of hit a tipping point in the armoring and prop making community that now there's an overabundance of information on how to do this. And people look at all of these different choices they have, and it's like, I have no idea where to start because there's just so much. And what I wanted to do is to take a short segment to kind of help out with that. And yes, there are many choices you have when choosing what to make your armor out of. You can pretty much literally make an armor piece out of anything. In fact, I can't think of anything offhand that you can't make armor out of.
Light bulbs.
Actually, you could probably grind those, cut them in half, and use them for gems on armor.
I would be really unsure about that. I'd be worried about them breaking.
You can do it carefully. Just like there are ways to cut wine bottles cleanly, there are ways to cut light bulbs cleanly. Plus, you can always melt glass. You just get a butane torch, melt it. Yes. Anyways, if you are making armor for your first time, there are probably some materials you will want to shy away from and some materials you will want to head towards. And that is simply because you're going to screw up your first time, and that is okay. It is a learning process. We
In
want you to
fact,
experiment.
it's guaranteed you're going to screw up your first time because everybody does. You're not alone. Even the best prop maker screwed up their first time.
And it's supposed to be that way because you're supposed to learn how to do it correctly your way and not necessarily the way that you're trying to follow in terms of instructions. Because it won't always work for everybody. They're meant as guidelines. So that said, because you're going to probably make mistakes, you won't want to do this using expensive materials that you're going to have to replace and or remake. Because in your frustration, you may wish to destroy them, and that is not a good idea when they are expensive. So my advice to you, first-time prop makers and armorers. Any type of foam is probably going to be a lot more forgiving than things like metal, fiberglass, or thermoplastics. This means Warbla, Styrene, Sintra, Terraflex, and pretty much everything else that you have heard of on the market that looks really awesome, but it can be very finicky to work with if you don't know the basics of armor making in the first place, or prop making for that matter. And so I highly urge you guys, please check out Pen Wiper's tutorial for craft foam. I urge you to check out Punished Props Foamsmith Trilogy. And lastly, I really urge you to check out Evil Ted Smith's YouTube tutorials on foam armor making. You don't necessarily have to use the materials they do. I know that Punished Props and Ted lean a little bit heavily on using barge, and barge can be a little difficult to find unless you order it online. But there are alternatives. I mean, certainly hot glue isn't the only way you can assemble armor. But I'd urge you to look at those three, because you can learn how to make the armor. Not the materials, the technique. How to work with patterns, how to make things fit around your body, the physics of curves, especially for women. And most of all, how to make it stable but flexible. Because there is something to be said for moving around in your armor. There are those who make the Gundam suits, and if you talk to them in person, you will find that not only can many of them not see, but they cannot see where they're going, which means they cannot move properly because they aren't aware of the space around them. That's why they have to have handlers. Fursuiters do this a lot too. If you can't see what's around you, then you don't know that there's a wall next to you, so you don't know how to move properly. Not that I know this from experience.
No, of course not. There's one that I want to add to that list, just because this has been a personal help to me, because I am crappy with armor, as I continually say. I prefer craft foam over everything else. Amethyst Angel has a really great series on not only how to use craft foam, but how to pattern with it, how to make all this really great stuff with it. So I recommend that one as well, Amethyst Angel.
Mm-hmm. And she actually has prop making books for sale as well on CD. I own, I think, all but one of them. And they're good stuff. So I would recommend starting there. You can always paper mache armor. There is nothing wrong with paper macheing your armor. It may not last as long as you would like from con to con. In fact, paper mache armor may only last you maybe two wears at a convention. But it's more of a learning process, because cosplays and costumes don't last forever, usually. They'll take a beating at a con anyway, because you're in crowded hallways. People run into you. Sometimes things get thrown at you, you know, what have you. Just like clothes wear out, costumes wear out too. So you can do basic things like that. You can make duct tape armor. You can use thermoplastics for armor, but I would recommend working with the softer materials first, because then you can start using those same techniques with the more expensive thermoplastics, because unfortunately even styrene is more expensive than craft foam. And it's more expensive than floor mats. If you guys are looking for the EVA foam that the Halo and Mass Effect suit makers use, you can pretty much buy them at any hardware store at this point, because they've all started stocking them, and you can get them at retailers as well. If you don't find them in the, I guess what they would call miscellany aisle, because they're used as garage anti-fatigue mats in hardware stores, that's where you'll find them, is wherever you find that sort of thing. You will find them as camping mats, even though they're not actually made for that, but you'll find them there. And you will find them as yoga mats, and you will find them as kids' play mats, or what they may call nap time mats. You'll find them especially around the school year, which is about to start in a month, so now would be a great time to stock up on EVA, EVA. So that's where you can find the floor mats, if you guys are looking for those. If you are looking for craft foam in bulk, if you go to places like Michael's, Joann's, Hobby Lobby, they sell rolls of foam. They sell it. It is 36 inches by 60 inches, and it is $7.99.
There you go. Giant roll of foam that I abuse all the time.
And that is 2 millimeters thick. They only sell it in the 2 millimeters thick. You can't get it any thicker than that in the rolls. However, if you wish, you may layer the foam to get it to the thickness that you want. So you can just buy multiple rolls and layer it however you want. You can buy it in more bulk quantities if you go online, and you'll have to find a bulk foam reseller near you, because you won't find anything larger than that generally at the retail level. Mm-hmm. 36 by 60 is pretty much the biggest you can get there. So that's where you can find the foam. As far as paper mache supplies, a lot of places will deliver ads to your door for free, usually once a week. They're grocery ads typically. You can always ask your neighbors and say, hey, if you guys don't need your newspapers, can I have them? And then you can have all the newspaper you want. Note that you can also use interfacing. Yes, the stuff that you fuse to the inside of your costumes. You can use that for paper mache. It's not limited to newspaper. You probably don't want to use the glossy junk mail stuff because it doesn't tend to stick as well, because it's coated in a material that doesn't allow it to absorb glue very well. The regular newspaper is matte. It's not coated, so it will absorb. So you can use that. Best paper mache mixture. You will find all sorts of mixtures online. Is there a best mixture? No, not really.
It's personal preference. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Exactly. I know that's depressing to hear, but because there are so many things you can put into your paper mache mixture, mm-hmm. it depends on what you're looking for. I have found for myself that the best glue mixture tends to be 1/3 white glue, or what they call PVA, 1/3 wood glue, and then 1/3 Mod Podge. Pick your Mod Podge. It doesn't really matter which one. And mixing all three together creates a pretty darn strong paper mache material that you can paint on. It doesn't self-level terribly well, but if you're looking for something self-leveling, you're going to have to thin it out, basically, with water, alcohol, what have you. You can make paper mache with other things. I know there's fast mache, which is basically powdered paper that you just add water and smear it on however you like. You can also use the flour, water, and salt method. If you do this, please bear in mind that it can have the possibility of growing mold. There are ways to get around it. There are things, additives you can put into it. You know, there's vinegar, there's cinnamon, there's boiled linseed oil. There's all sorts of things you can add to it so that it doesn't grow mold, because you don't want it to be stored for 6 months and then you pull it out of the box and it's green and it's growing things like mushrooms, because that's gross. And
you're unless that's what you're trying to go for.
Hey, if you're trying, you know, that if you're trying to go for the all natural look, please go right ahead. I don't recommend it for health reasons.
Just don't come near me and we're fine.
Natural weathering is not what we had in mind. Plus, you'll have the entire convention basically pointing at you saying, go take a shower.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make paper mache out of multiple things. There is not a best way of doing it. In terms of the harder materials, I've noticed that a lot of people are intimidated by fiberglassing.
Yeah, we are. I think it just sounds really, really scary, because you're mixing a couple of different things. You're having to wear masks. You're having to do all these different steps that you don't need to really do with Warbler, with Wonderflex.
It does. And fiberglass is glass. Yes, you are working with microscopic strands of glass. I will get that out there just so it's said. But that said, it's really not as dangerous as you might think. And a lot of people don't know this, I've noticed. You don't have to fiberglass using fiberglass matting. It's not required. You don't have to. It does add a lot of strength, because that is actually where fiberglass gets its strength, is from the mat, not from the resin. You can use the resin by itself. Mm-hmm. It is not strong. It is very brittle. It will give a hard coat, but it will be a very, very brittle hard coat that will crack and it will take your paint job with it. So you can do it without the mat, which is part glass. That's what fiberglass matting is. It's glass fibers. But You can use it with newspaper, just like paper mache. You can use it with interfacing, just like paper mache. You don't have to fiberglass the traditional way. And I've seen some pretty magnificent armor made with fiberglass resin, just resin in a can, and fusible interfacing from Joann's. Yes, you can do it. You can stretch it over shapes and then paint the fiberglass onto it, and it will harden in that shape. Kind of like a thermoplastic, just without the plastic. It's thermoforming, it will harden. So, in that sense, it is a little bit like thermoplastics, but once it sets, you cannot reform it. It is a thermoset. It heats up, that's it. You get one shot. Fiberglass resin is cheap. You can buy a quart for about $15 at Walmart. It's in the automotive section. Yes, it smells to high heaven. But then again, frankly, so does Mod Podge. So does tacky glue. So does epoxy. So do a lot of things. Mildew on towels smells terrible. So it's not that fiberglass resin smells so terrible that you can't work with it. The reason they tell you to use a respirator is twofold. One, because it helps protect you from the fumes, which can get a little bit overwhelming if you're not ventilating. That's the secret, guys. That's the secret to working with fiberglass resin. Just ventilate. It's not that bad. The fumes are really not that bad if you ventilate. But the other thing is that the ventilator is also, or the respirator is primarily used when you're sanding. Because when you're sanding microscopic strands of glass, what particulate do you get in the air? You get glass, which is not good to have inside your lungs. That is why you wear the respirator. But if you don't sand it, you also don't have that worry. You can always coat it with other things like, paper mache or Bondo, and then you don't have to worry about sanding the fiberglass. You can even use fiberglass if you don't want to put it on the outside of your armor. You can put it on the inside of your armor for strength, and that way you don't even see it on the outside. You can do one layer of fiberglass resin and then like one or two layers of paper mache over it, and then you're golden. You can just sand the paper mache. So don't be intimidated by the stories. Fiberglassing is really not that bad. It's basically just infusing another material with resin. You get to pick the material. Choose your adventure. What do you feel like doing today? And likewise, Bondo is basically a paste or a putty. It's an automotive putty that you can use to smooth out surfaces. So once you've done your fiberglassing and or paper mache or whatever your base is, if you coat it, say in a primer, and you notice that there's a really rough texture to it, or if there are cracks in places, if there's little divots in places, and you want to smooth them out, Bondo is a great way of doing it. Bondo does add weight to your armor. It's just like wood glue or wood filler. Some people use watered down wood filler. Great for filling in cracks. For those who don't know, wood filler is actual wood ground down into a paste with other things. So you're actually basically filling in wood particulate to your armor. That adds a lot of weight. It makes it very heavy. Great finish. Easy to sand. Beautiful. You won't want to be wearing it after about 2 hours. Because I've done this. So that said, Bondo is a good alternative, still adds weight. Looks beautiful, looks gorgeous when you finish it off. Sanding, 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 and when you think you're done, you have to sand it again to get that absolutely glossy finish. But it's another material you can use. It's in the automotive section. You basically mix it as the instructions, and then you spread it like frosting. Please, for the love of God, don't eat it. It self-levels too. It's self-leveling basically just means that over time, gravity will smooth it out for you. You don't have to sit there and manually smooth it out. It does it. It levels or flattens itself on its own. Yay, go nature. Physics is awesome, kids. So is science. And then, of course, you have your thermoplastics. And yes, thermoplastics can make your life easier. Yes, they can be easy to form. Yes, they mean you can make armor within a couple of hours. Yes, there's less priming and preparing with some thermoplastics. Warbla is not the be-all end-all of armor. You still have to prime Warbla. You still have to sand Warbla. You still have to finish off Warbla. It has a loss of structural integrity if you stretch it too far because it gets brittle. There's no underlying structure to it like there is with Wonderflex. So it's great for compound curves, but that's because it has no underlying structure. And unfortunately, Warbla is still expensive. Warbla Pi, you can make Warbla Pi. It works great. You can't make very big sheets of it like you can purchase Warbla, simply because most people don't have a cookie sheet or a large table with rolling pin that big and can get it consistently that flat. And Warbla Pi is also not, it's not as financially savvy, perhaps, as it would be in other countries, because we have to import plastics here. We have to import Instamorph. We have to import Shaplock. We have to import friendly plastic. That's why it's not as cheap as you may think it is as an alternative to Warbler, especially if you're looking for the very, very large sheets. Because it takes a lot of Instamorph, let me tell you. I mean, there are ways you can make thermoplastics on your own. If you mix veggie oil, water, and cornstarch, you get a biodegradable thermoplastic. If you mix milk and vinegar, you get thermoplastic. If you mix glycerin, potato starch, and water, you also get thermoplastic. So yeah, you can make these in your kitchen, guys. Please feel free, go on Instructables. They're all online. You can even melt Walmart and Target and Kroger and everybody else's plastic shopping bags. If you put them all together in a giant tin pan and you melt them in your oven, it will smell horrible and you'll get your own thermoplastic. I would not recommend making food in your oven after that point because it is toxic. A lot of these things that I'm talking about do have toxic downsides to them. That's why you discuss the safety about these things as you're considering what material to use, so that you understand what you're getting yourself into. So you can do all of these things. They have their upsides and downsides as far as plastics go. I'm just saying that you shouldn't necessarily jump straight to these things because you think that you will have a better chance of success using this particular material in your first piece of armor. It's not necessarily going to work that way if you don't have the basic techniques down. And a lot of thermoplastics, Warbla and styrene in particular, are very finicky with heat guns. If you get it at the right temperature, it's great. They do burn easily, so you have to constantly move your heat gun, and you have to be very aware of the temperature that's coming out of it, especially if you have an adjustable heat gun. And just like any other cosplay, they will take battle damage. People will run into you, they'll get dinged and dented in transport. That's just, it's what happens to armor. So don't expect it to stay pristine forever. I'll just say that. I mean, you can use Bondo to fill in any sort of damage it takes, but then you have to worry about painting it again.
So
That's
one
the other
thing
thing that, go
I
ahead.
want to add, because even though my armor knowledge is very, very limited, I will have to say this. In order to help strengthen Warbler, Wonderflex, almost pretty much every thermoplastic, a lot of people end up using craft foam. So that's why it's a good step to go from craft foam and then work your way up to thermoplastics. You're going to use craft foam again as your base. And I find so many other cosplayers who abuse the crap out of craft foam just as much as Warbler or Wonderflex or any of that stuff. It's your base. This is your template. This is what you cover. This is how you sandwich everything. This is how you keep your Warbler steady instead of all floppy and weird. That's how you
Yes.
graduate. That's how you learn. You start with the soft stuff, move to the hard stuff, but you still utilize the soft stuff to make the hard stuff awesome.
And something else to think about with the hard materials versus the soft. I know a lot of people, they want the holy grail of armor, which is being hard on the outside and squishy on the inside for flexibility so you can move. So you want it to look really tough on the outside, and the reason for that is now what I will say about this is because a lot of people are looking for this magical substance that gives you a tough paint job on the outside but still remains flexible on the inside. Thing is, you can give something a hard candy shell but it's just that, a hard candy shell. If you don't have any structure underneath it, something hard like fiberglass or thermoplastic underneath your paint job, as soon as you get flex, you're going to get cracks. You're going to lose your paint job. So if you expect a lot of movement in your armor, then on the outside, you also need to have something slightly flexible so that your armor will flex with you, so that if somebody runs into you, you're not suddenly going to have this giant crack going across your chest. This is why stormtroopers use the thicker styrene so that they don't lose the glossy paint job on the outside. However, those who say use foam, okay, you can probably use styrene on the outside, but some of the other thermoplastics, there's no structure underneath them. Craft foam isn't going to support thermoplastic very, very well over time. And you're going to get something terrible happening to your paint job in the form of cracks and dents. So I urge you guys to consider using something like Plastidip. Plastidip is basically spray rubber in a can. You can also can. But what you want to do is give it just a little bit of flex, just a little bit. You can also mix latex in with your paint. Just a little bit of flex so that your paint will flex with your armor, so that it has that underlying structure. So that way, you know, that really thin hard shell coat isn't going to save your paint job. It's not going to save your armor. So please don't think about it that way. And you're also going to have a little bit less sanding if you have the Plastidip, because you don't sand Plastidip, be flexy. It'll give you a different texture, certainly, with your paint job. But it's something to consider, because with all of the other types of finishes, you're going to have a lot of sanding. I hope you have a show marathon queued up in your Netflix or your Hulu, because you're going to be there a while. Good paint jobs are all about sanding. And there are people who have covered how to paint armor. WM Armory has tutorials out. Kamui has tutorials out via Benny. Vulpin obviously has his painting book. There are numerous people that have how to paint and weather armor books out that you can go check out. And the one that I wanted to briefly cover, brief, and that I say you really should not be doing this, is metal armor. Please do not wear metal armor to a con. You will hate yourself. It'll look really cool. You will still hate yourself at the end of the day, because metal armor, one, isn't allowed at some cons because of metal. Two, metal has a lot of sharp edges, and if you forget to buff even one of them, you will be sorry. Three, it's difficult to transport because there is no flexi. And four, metal armor is heavy. If you have never worn chainmail, please put on a chainmail shirt before you decide to make an entire suit of armor out of metal, because chainmail shirts run between 10 and 20 pounds, depending on the metal that you use. That's just the shirt. That's not anything else you put on it. So if you want to run around in, you know, 50, 60 pound armor, go for it.
And people wonder why I like craft foam.
It's also expensive, by the way, and you have to have specialized tools to work with it.
Expensive as sin. The effect, really epic, very cool, but you really need to be working yourself out day in and day out to build the body strength to actually wear the armor. It's not about looking good in it. It's actually having the muscle to carry that armor all day long, because that stuff gets heavy fast. It's like a ball gown dress. It's like, you think that's heavy? Oh my goodness. And that's heavy enough.
If you're going to absolutely have to wear metal armor, go work at a forge as an intern, because that way you'll not only have the area to make your armor, you'll also be working out the muscles you'll need to wear it.
Double duty.
Go work at a forge. Go intern at a Renaissance Festival vendor who operates either a glass forge or a metal forge, and have fun. But otherwise, please don't wear metal armor to a con. I can understand individual metal pieces like gauntlets. That's fine. Full body suit? No. Just save yourself the trouble, please. I'm not saying it's not cool. It's cool. It's awesome. You'll hate yourself.
So true.
That's kind of a basic rundown of all of the different materials that you can use for armor making. And we can always do a future segment on how to use each of them. If you guys have any individual questions, you can always email us and ask. I think I've worked with everything except Bondo, but I've worked with all the other materials. So they each have their pros and cons. I still do make armor, I promise. I just haven't done it recently, mostly because I haven't had time with my job. But, you know, hopefully that was somewhat informative for you guys, and hopefully it will inspire you to do your own experimentation and Google searching to figure out what your options are. Because it can be overwhelming, but it's also a lot of fun. So go out there, make armor, don't burn things down, unless you're working with a forge.
Nice safely tagline.
I have this reputation. I don't understand why.
Gee, let me think. You say things like that, and then I wonder.
I say this every time. I've only intentionally lit something that was not fire poi on fire once. Once. And that was a fabric burn test, and that was for you guys. That was a tutorial. I have never intentionally lit anything else on fire besides my fire poi and like candles, maybe incense, which I can't even really light on fire because it smolders. So there. I have an undeserved reputation.
But fire is awesome.
I can't disagree.
There you go.
Well, we will call this a close to our episode 94 of Cosquad, the podcast for all things fire and cosplay. You guys can always contact us on all of our social media, which you will find here, 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 and here. You can always email us to ask us questions about being on stage for cosplay contests, making armor, and anything else having to do with cosplay. Remember to be sending in your audio and video for our episode 100, which is coming up very, very soon. You guys only have a couple more months to send that in to us so that we can celebrate our 100th episode. Of course, shout out to all of our new listeners in the States and around the world. Thank you guys so much for downloading and listening to the show. Thank you so much for sharing our links all over the interwebs. We will take over the world one day, but today is not that day. But until then, we will see you guys in episode 95. Bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.